Hi, my name is Dr. Hilary Van Horn-Gatlin, your moderator for tonight's house call. I'm so glad you're taking the time tonight to listen to our house call, Stay Around Telephone Group Visits, Women's Sexual Health. Now, for those of you who are joining us tonight, please know that this is an interactive call. So what that means is that we're live. Also, if you've got questions at any time during the call, press 0 and we will answer your questions live. If you want to schedule an appointment with your gynecologist for a PAP, or if you need a mammogram, go ahead and press 7 and have your Kaiser card ready. It's free to participate, so stay on the line to join in. Now, tonight there's going to be three important things I want you to learn from our call: the surprising issues and health conditions that can impact your sexual functioning and well-being, how to best protect your sexual health, whether you're 20 or all the way up to 80, and the importance and reasons behind getting a pap smear about every 3 years. Now, we're going to speak frankly this evening, but we will keep things as appropriate as possible. And don't forget, if you've got a question at any time about anything related to your libido, to your pap, your mammogram, any of those needs, go ahead and press 0, and we will answer your questions live as time permits. And again, you can make an appointment at any time for that pap, your mammo, or to meet with your gynecologist if you press 7. Now, because the call is recorded and live, just use your first name on the air. Of course, if you press 7 and you want to make an appointment, that information is entirely confidential. If you continue to listen and participate, that indicates your agreement with our recording. Please have your Kaiser card available if you want to schedule an appointment. And so, ladies on the phone, tonight I am so happy to have with us Drs. Julie Nguyen, Dr. Sarah Fletcher, who are both OBGYNs in Elk Grove, and Dr. Jean McKenzie, a women's health psychologist from South Sacramento. So we're going to start talking about some of the basics, but again, for those of you joining us, if you have a question that you want to ask our specialists at any time, press 0 and we will answer these questions live. If you want to make an appointment, press 7. So ladies, let's talk about the basics. What can we define healthy sexual functioning as? I know there's a lot of different beliefs as to what that might look like, and obviously every time you go past a magazine stand at your local grocery store, everybody's got an opinion. So what are we really looking at?
This is Sarah Fletcher. I think healthy sexual functioning is ability to engage in some kind of sexual activity in a safe way that's pleasurable for you and your partner. I think that's a reasonable definition.
Yeah. And I also, this is Dr. Nguyen, I also think there is no real amount of sex that is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really want patients to be aware of that. You can have sex once a week, once a month, as long as you're satisfied with the amount of sex that you're having, that's fine.
So it's really, it sounds like it comes down to kind of, for each of us, an individual definition. As long as it's healthy, it's consensual.
Absolutely.
And it's meeting our needs.
Exactly.
Dr. McKenzie, anything that you would add for that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it is a lot about what we perceive as satisfying and how we feel about it. And a lot of times we have these myths about what is quote-unquote normal that might make us feel badly about our sex life. But as long as you and your partner are fulfilled, I think that's the main thing. And there is no normal with all of this. I think a lot of it has to do with expectations too. And if we have unrealistic expectations, we might feel pretty disappointed. But it's about talking to your partner and having good communication about what you both need out of the relationship.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great point. I think between the combination of social media, everything that's in the news, and then on top of it, again, all those things that we see, even just in the checkout line at the grocery store, it always feels like maybe we're not having enough sex, or maybe, you know, everybody else has it better than us, or it's different, or there's something maybe that even potentially we're doing wrong. And so I think that that is something that we talk about. Now, are there any other things that we really want to think about when we think about part of our sexual health and what's important?
So one important thing is to make sure that you are getting regular pap screening with your provider. For most women, this is going to involve a speculum exam every 3 years, and this is a screening test for cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. And why is that important when we're thinking about our sexual health?
So cervical cancer is caused by a virus, a common virus called HPV, which stands for human papillomavirus. You know, 80 to 90% of men and women who have ever had sex have been exposed to the HPV virus. And most women will clear the virus on their own if they have a healthy immune system. But on occasion, you can acquire a more virulent strain or a kind of a nastier version of the virus, and this can stick around and cause some problems on the cervix. It can rarely, but can lead to cervical cancer down the road, and that, of course, has implications for long-term health as well as ability to have children, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds like pap smears are really important. And again, for those of you who are listening, if you do want to book a pap, if you're due or you're overdue, which many of us on this call are, go ahead and press 7 and we can get you booked right here and now. Now, here's a really common story that I hear, and I want to talk about this. I want the doctors, the experts to weigh in. So there's more and more talk about women's libido. You know, as a psychologist myself, I can't tell you how often my patients and I are talking about healthy libido or, you know, these libido tests or, you know, are there medications to improve my libido? And one of the common comments that I hear is that a man's libido when he's young, it really peaks, where a woman's libido is the best in her 30s and 40s. That's like our ideal sexual prime. Is this true? And if so, what do we mean by that?
This is Dr. Nguyen. No, this is not true. you know, I this is a myth. You know, women can have healthy libido well into their 60s and 70s. And I actually have some older patients who have a very active sex life, mm-hmm. A lot later than just their 30s and 40s. I think there's a lot of things that come with age. One is just maturity and confidence in yourself. And so you tend to maybe have more sex around this time than you did earlier on. And then, you know, as you age, potentially there are some physical barriers that then maybe decrease your sexual activity. And so you think, oh, it peaks at age 40, mm-hmm. but that's not really the case, and it doesn't have to be the case. So
okay, so for those of us who are on the line who have passed the 40 marker and are still waiting for that peak, it's not like there's a magic number that we've missed necessarily.
No.
Okay, all right. Anything that you want to add, Dr. McKenzie?
Well, I think we have to keep in mind that there's a lot of factors that play a role in libido, and so looking at those factors are, I think, important in terms of sleep. How much sleep are you getting? If you're very sleep deprived, it's going to affect your libido. If you're stressed out or you're mm-hmm. anxious or depressed, that can certainly have an effect. And also, if you're having relationship problems with your partner, that is definitely going to affect your desire to have sex with them. So I think we have to look at some of those issues too when we have the discussion about libido.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is it's not just obviously the physical, but it's the emotional, the mental aspects, and all the other things that just go into, it almost sounds like well-being in general, and
absolutely.
Our libido can go hand in hand.
Yep, that's right.
If I could add just one thing, this
yeah.
is Dr. Fletcher. I also think one of the biggest things I find with my patients is when they when patients have young children, and just how much that can be a physical barrier, just finding time and a place, but also from a hormonal level, women who are, for example, breastfeeding or getting up, you know, like Dr. McKenzie said, frequently throughout the night, I mean, that has a huge effect on your willingness and ability to engage in less frequent or more frequent intercourse.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is you've got the social, the emotional stressors, you've got, it sounds like in life phases, so if we're not sleeping well at night, and that could even include, I'm guessing, then menopause, mm-hmm. potentially, as being a place if we're having a lot of hot flashes, we're not sleeping well at night, that may also impact our libido?
I think another, this is Dr. Fletcher again, one of the physical manifestations that can come along with menopause is hormonal changes within the vagina, which can cause sometimes dryness, which over time can lead to pain with intercourse. I think patients who suffer from this, and it's very, very common, although many patients don't bring it up unless I ask them about it, but there's some, you know, fairly common, easy things that we can try to overcome this as a barrier. But if sex hurts, you're less likely to want it, and then that kind of becomes a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. So kind of speaking to that, we had one of our listeners tonight wants to ask a question. And for those of you on the phone listening, if you do want to ask a question at any time, go ahead and press 0, and we will answer your questions live. And if you want to schedule that mammogram or pap that you might be due or overdue from, go ahead, press 7, and we'll get you booked. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Sandy, who has a really good question kind of along these lines. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi. I've been married over 40 years, and we have an active sexual life, but I'm almost 64, and lubricant is an issue for me, and I seem to be allergic to everything. I even have a problem with KY jelly.
So the question you were asking is there anything else you can use, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what are the options for somebody like Sandy who either needs lubricant or is more sensitive?
So in particular for sex, I generally suggest a silicone-based lubricant. And I wish I had my handout. I have a really good handout that I mm-hmm. like to give to patients. I think Firmani.
That's a good one.
Is a silicone-based yeah. one. Sandy, have you tried something even as simple as coconut oil?
Sandy's not on the line anymore, but that's a good one. So you're saying even coconut oil?
Even coconut oil and olive oil are really good lubricant options.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so even if you have some allergic reactions to some of these other over-the-counters, there are some other natural substances.
Yes.
And just to piggyback on that, I think, because I see a lot of, this is Dr. McKenzie again, I see a lot of women who are distressed about pain with intercourse, and they either haven't tried a lubricant or they've tried a lubricant that really hasn't worked for them very well. Sometimes the water-based ones get dried out very quickly. Mm-hmm. So the silicone ones are really good. The Femani that we mentioned, there's also one called Pink Indulgence, I believe.
Pink Indulgence. Okay.
And then there's also hybrid ones that are a hybrid between silicone and moisturizing lubricants. And that can be very good for women who are in the menopausal stage mm-hmm. and are not as naturally dry. I mean, naturally.
Lubricating.
Yes.
This is Dr. Fletcher. I also point out that it's not abnormal to need a lubricant even mm-hmm. when you're a young yeah. and reproductive age woman.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I think there's a myth that if you need a lubricant, that's a problem,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that's really true. I mean, there are, vaginal secretions are very widely among all of my patients,
mm-hmm.
And so just never be afraid to suggest that to your partner in using one because it could greatly improve your experience.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so again, you're saying age is not a factor here at all. It's really just it varies from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So we have another question, and here's a great question that Catherine's asking. Catherine, go ahead and ask your question.
Oh, okay, the question that I was asking, I have another question if I can ask the second one, but the first one I was asking, I'm 61, and from an early stage, I've always had to use sensitive soap. And if I don't use sensitive, I have two bars of soap in my shower, and if I pick up the wrong one and I put the soap down in my female area, then within seems like 30 minutes I start burning and I know it's going to change my pH balance. But I don't always like to go to Kaiser every time for that. I wanted to know if there's something natural that I can get or do I always have to book an appointment to go to Kaiser when I use the wrong soap because I know what it is. I've been going through it for years.
Right.
And it's really... I want to try to prevent it, but sometimes, you know, by accident, I might, you know, as I stated, I have two bars of soap, and if I grab the wrong one, I know it instantly.
All right. Well, let's see what the doctors say to that.
So What I would say is, you know, you can always just call the advice nurse and you don't necessarily have to come in. If it's just irritation that you're experiencing, generally just, you know, when you stop using and giving it a little bit of time, it will clear. Also, a little bit of 1% hydrocortisone cream, applying it to the area can also help. And if that really doesn't, then I do think that a visit is warranted, just so we can make sure that nothing else is going on.
And I would just add from Dr. Fletcher that if, you know, just plain old warm water is usually all you need. If you have to use soap, I have a lot of trouble talking my patients out of using soap in the vaginal area.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to use soap, use something very, very mild like Dove Bar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So really you're saying that, you know, we don't have to use soap. It's more just one of those things that we ladies like to do.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Now, I've got a really great question about desire. And Kenny, do you have a moment to ask your question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't hear all of your questions.
Oh, I said go ahead and ask your question for the docs.
Oh, I'm menopausal, and since I've been that way, it's like I don't have the desire anymore. It's like everything just kind of stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know if there's something that can be done about that. I mean, once in a while, I guess my hormones will start getting a little active and I'm thinking, oh, okay. But a lot of times it doesn't. It takes a lot longer to get, I'll use the word motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really like to see if there was something I could do about that, because I would still like to be sexually active more than what I am now. And my husband's a very good partner, and he's very understanding of all this, but I would just like to know about things like that.
I think that you ask an excellent question that a lot of us want to know, which is how do we talk about libido, I think really what oftentimes we're talking about is desire. What can we do when it feels like that's lacking?
I just want to clarify something about desire. I think when we talk about desire, we have to differentiate between men and women here. There's very different responses. And with men, they typically have kind of a spontaneous desire, whereas with women, it's more of a responsive desire. And that means that more arousal is needed. And once the arousal comes into play, then the desire will go hand in hand with that for women. So it's a very different process for a woman. They really need more of that arousal, therefore more of the foreplay to get to the point where they are having desire,
mm-hmm.
So it's not just spontaneous. So I
mm-hmm.
think that's really important, and maybe exploring with your partner different ways to have foreplay and make sure that you're at a good arousal point.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also recommend making an appointment to come in to be seen so that your obstetrician can do a pelvic exam, because we do want to make sure that nothing else is going on in terms of the vaginal health, that the tissue is really healthy. Because, again, going back to what Dr. Fletcher says, sometimes if there's any sort of discomfort, it becomes a cycle where you aren't able to relax or engage fully because there's this fear underlying.
So, and again, for those of you listening, if you want to make that appointment, if you want to schedule that PAP, if you're due, if you're overdue, and we want to make sure that everything is working and what it needs to be, go ahead at any time and press 7. Have your Kaiser card ready, and we can take care of it while you're on the line today. Again, press 7 if you want to schedule that appointment. So press 7. So, you know, so again, you're talking about arousal, you're talking about obviously medically making sure that everything's okay. And we've got a couple other people that are asking, you know, some of those same questions, which is, you know, kind of ways to establish arousal. Now, I've heard about things as simple as, it will just sound simple, but it doesn't sound as exciting, which is things like scheduling sex or scheduling time for foreplay. Is that something that you recommend, especially if your libido or your desire is low?
I would say absolutely, because with everyone's busy lifestyles and schedules, it's very difficult to fit in time for each other. And that means not just scheduling sex, but scheduling dates and scheduling time to spend together to build that emotional intimacy, which can then help lead to sexual intimacy. And also good communication with your partner, because sometimes there can be desire discrepancies where one partner feels like, okay, you know, 5 times a week is normal for sex, and the other partner thinks, no, I'm really happy with one. So you have to try to negotiate and find a place in the middle where you're both satisfied, and that takes really good, honest communication. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are nervous about talking about sex, and so I think that that's something that really needs to be addressed as well in the discussion of libido.
Okay. Now, one of the things that's going to come up, and I know, Stacey, you've got a great question here, and I think, you know, a lot of people on the line are looking at this. You know, men have the little blue pill. They've got the little blue pill. Is there anything for us? Stacey, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, my question was basically, the men have the little blue pill, and if I've already, if I don't really fit into some of the categories that you're talking about, but I feel like my libido is low, is there anything that is out there for women? I know the last time that I spoke with my gynecologist, she said that there was something possibly that was in the works that might get approved soon, and that was probably, that might have been about a year ago. So I was wondering if there's anything for women besides emotional or psychological or you know, all of that. Is there something for women?
That's a great question. So, you know, we talked about this before. There's word of a little pink pill. Docs, what do you think?
So this is Dr. Fletcher. There is a little pink pill. It's called Addy. You know, and it has not really been everything I think everyone was hoping for. It's, you know, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but, you know, it really, it's very expensive, and it is really been shown to only increase, you know, improving sexual experiences by like once per month. So it really doesn't seem to be worth all the hype. It's actually not a medication that we're currently prescribing at Kaiser at this point, because it just really, it doesn't seem to be working. Yeah, unfortunately, there's just not, you know, an easy pill that you can take to just turn that all back on.
And it's actually a pill that you actually take every single day. So it's not a pill that you take as needed. Oh, I want to have sex tonight. I'm just going to go ahead and take this pill. It doesn't work that way. And for those of you who drink any alcohol, being on this pill, you're not supposed to have any.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the little pink pill is not there for us yet then?
No.
Okay. All right. Now, another thing that's come up is the pain issue for people who have pain with sex. I know this is something that comes up for a lot of people, and I think that this is a really good question. Christina, would you be willing to share your question with the doctors to see if there's any recommendations that they might have? Christina, can you hear us?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My phone's cutting in and out. So I have pain whenever I have sex. Like, even masturbation, there's pain there. I've tried lubrication. I don't know what I can do. And it's not that I have a problem being aroused. I am. I just, there's pain. Is there anything I can do about that?
Okay. And this is a question that a lot of women on the line have been asking about. So what are your recommendations if there is pain with intercourse or with masturbation?
So, I think it's important, this is Dr. Fletcher, I think it's important to realize that the nerves that stimulate the clitoral area and all of the tissues that are involved in arousal, they often overlap with, you know, the same tissues that, you know, urinary bladder, the vaginal tissue, uterus. And so I've heard this before that women that, you know, even achieving orgasm can actually ignite some of those pain fibers, even though there's pleasurable fibers kind of right next door. I think the important thing is about kind of trying to amp up the response to the, you know, the pleasure centers and kind of turn down the response to those painful stimuli. And this takes some practice. It's certainly not an easy solution, but we do have some wonderful pelvic floor physical therapists here at Kaiser who are often work with patients with this exact issue. It's kind of, there's some biofeedback techniques about just kind of amplifying the right sensations because, the nerves are just jumbled in that area in many women.
And so how do you get an appointment with that person?
So what I recommend is making an appointment with your gynecologist first, like Dr. Fletcher was saying, just so we can better discern where exactly that pain is coming from, and then we can help direct you from there.
And again, ladies, if you're on the phone, go ahead and press 7 right now if this is an issue, and we can make that appointment for you. We can schedule your PAP, we can schedule your mammogram, and make sure that we really are taking care fully of your sexual health. And, again, pain with intercourse, and even the fear of pain, I'm guessing all impact libido. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. If you anticipate that you're going to have pain, you're going to be fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And so sex can become very anxiety-provoking and become a vicious cycle where when you feel anxious about it, you're going to tense your whole body up, including the pelvic area, and that pelvic floor might get real tense. So that's where it's really important to come in to be evaluated to see what's really going on there and get sent to the right people for the help.
Mm-hmm. Now, while on the subject again of libido, of desire, and sexual health and functioning, are there any medications, are there any other conditions that can impact our sexual functioning that we may not think about as potentially impacting our sexual health as women?
So a big one for many of my patients is breastfeeding. This is certainly, breastfeeding in time when you have a new baby, you're not sleeping as much. You often have gone through some kind of trauma during delivery that can cause pain. But just the hormonal changes that are associated with breastfeeding and the postpartum period certainly can have significant effect on the vaginal tissues. And I find that this is a topic that very few women expect to experience after they've had a baby. I think most people assume they're going to wait a couple weeks. Maybe it's the 6-week mark or the 8-week mark, suddenly they get the go-ahead from their doctor, and then everything should be perfect just like it was before. But I find that that's pretty unusual. It takes time to kind of adjust the tissues in that time, and again, you haven't had sex for a while, and so kind of having to retrain the tissue is can be difficult for a lot of new moms.
Okay, all right, that's a very, very fair question. Are there any other medications or any other issues that women should be aware of that might be impacting their health?
Well, there can be sexual side effects with certain medications that I think it's important to keep in mind and talking to your doctor if you have questions or concerns about any medication you're on. But, for instance, antidepressants can sometimes have sexual side effects. Not always, but that is a possibility where it can affect your desire level or even ability to orgasm. So I think that might be a discussion you need to have with your doctor if you're on an antidepressant and you feel like your libido has been affected.
Interesting. Okay. And again, for those of you that are on the line, even if you want to make that appointment but you don't have your, scheduling book in front of you, go ahead and press 7, and we will even send out a reminder to call you at a later time to go ahead and schedule that appointment or to schedule up any PAP or mammogram that you have to. So one last question, really briefly, because I think that we have a lot of great questions and a lot of people have had some really interesting things. So going back to, something we talked about at the beginning, which was about, getting a PAP, and you talked about HPV. We have one question about that. Shanta, do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
So I was just wondering about HPV. I don't really know much about it, and I know that I overheard you saying that, if things get worse, you can possibly get the cancer, cervical cancer, or not be able to have children as well. So I was just wondering if there was things you could do to help yourself and your body to prevent those things.
Okay, and just so I'm clear, is that if you already have HPV? Because I know that this is an
increasing... Yes.
Perfect. All right, so thank you for that. Yes.
So this is Dr. Fletcher. Absolutely, there are some things you can do to help decrease the risk of HPV. So even if you've been had an abnormal pap smear in the past or had HPV infection in the past, if you're under 26 years old, you are still a candidate for HPV vaccination. And this is a vaccine that protects against the most nine common HPV strains. And so if you even if you've been exposed to one or several of them in the past, if you get vaccinated, you can potentially get protection from other strains that you've never been exposed to. So that's a huge thing that you can do. And also, I can't stress enough of just regular condom use, especially with any new partner and getting regularly screened for other STDs, most commonly chlamydia and gonorrhea.
And then just also, you know, staying healthy so that your immune system is nice and strong. Don't smoke if you
really?
Smoke. Yeah.
Smoking.
Oh, yes, yes. Smoke, definitely.
Oh.
So don't smoke. You want to eat healthy, exercise, come back for your follow-up, you know, repap and HPV testing again just to make sure that it has gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And try to, you know, lead a little less stressful life.
Okay.
That's the best thing.
And then one last thing, because I know a lot of people are asking this question. So speaking of the PAPs, I know this has come up a lot, and we're talking about sexual health, libido, desire. We know that these are all great things to talk to our OBGYN about. What if we've had the same sexual partner for a long time or we haven't had a sexual partner for quite a while? Do we still need to come back for that PAP as part of our sexual health?
This is Dr. Fletcher. Yes, you have to come back every 3 years. Even patients who have had normal screening for many, many years in a row can kind of all of a sudden have an abnormal pap smear. So it's really important to come regularly every 3 years. Certainly the more that if you have a monogamous partner and over time your risk does go down, but it's still important to be screened.
Mm-hmm. And it could be that your body suppressed the virus all those years, and it doesn't mean anybody cheated or did anything wrong, but now it's coming out. And then it's also, again, a perfect opportunity to discuss all of these other issues that could potentially be going on in terms of your women's health that, you know, we can help you take care of.
Okay. And it's not just that when we do a cervical screen, it's not just about HPV, am I correct?
No, it's not. So we also do the actual pap smear, which
mm-hmm.
checks for abnormal cells on the cervix itself.
Mm. Okay. Now, one final question just I have to ask, ladies. Are the rest of your coworkers in OBGYN as amazing and knowledgeable and personable and comfortable talking about all this stuff as you all are?
More so.
All right. Hey, well, I have to say thank you. Thank you to those of you who joined us tonight. If you want to go ahead and make that appointment with your OBGYN, if you want to get scheduled for your PAP, your mammo, press 7 now, and we will go ahead and get you taken care of, or we can add you to a call list and follow up with you later. Just press 7, and we will go ahead and get you taken care of. Thank you for joining us. And remember, if you have questions that we didn't address tonight, you can follow up anytime with your OBGYN. You can also get more information on kp.org, and the house calls, including tonight's, is available on our KP South Sacramento website on the Health Resources homepage. For generic, non-personal questions, you can also call us at 916-544-6220, or again, press 7 right now, and we will get you taken care of. And again, this is our health education department that will answer those calls at 916-544-6220. They can even connect you with a health coach, so helping people stay stress-free, quit smoking, do some of these things that we're really talking about, because it sounds like what I'm hearing from all of you is that our sexual health, our well-being, they're all linked. And so I want to thank you all for joining this call, for taking care of yourselves, and really looking at how you can thrive. Thank you. Press 7 if you've got one last appointment that you want to make, and have a great night. And again, if you're still on the line, go ahead and press 7 if you haven't already, and we will get you scheduled or we will call you back. Just go ahead and press 7. Thank you.